This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, and welcome to Yak Yarns, brought to you by the Canterbury District Health Board Youth Advisory Council.
Yak Yarns is an informative show that aims to educate and bring awareness to all things youth health. You can find us on our Instagram, Facebook and website.
Let us know if you have any questions
or if there's anything you want to know from our friendly health professionals.
We hope you enjoy this episode. It's time to yak about health.
So hi guys, welcome along to Yak Yarns episode 2. My name's Chelsea, I'm the deputy chairperson of the council, and this is my friend Tori who's going to come along and join us tonight. So just letting you know, Yak Yarns is a conversation series that we're having as part of the council, where we are working with health professionals in the health sector to talk about things young people related. So if you have any questions, let us know, because we're keeping an eye on the live stream. So if you have any questions for Sue as we go along, let us know. But we just want to introduce Dr. Sue Bashaw. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Pleasure.
So we thought we'd kick start off by telling us about who you are and what you do.
Sure. Well, I could start with my mihi, but it's always a bit funny doing a mihi just online. So I'll do the equivalent. My mihi is that I was born in Hong Kong, so I've got Empire Maid stamped on the back of my neck. So I've been living in a colony for quite a long time.
Wow.
But I didn't live in Hong Kong for a while, till I was about 9. Then I went to boarding school in England. So we came to New Zealand in 1981 with 3 kids, and then we had another one while we were here. But I went to medical school in London, so sort of didn't do much medicine, as you can tell. I was mostly a mum until I did a locum at Student Health, which was great, at the university. And I guess that's where I started working with young people. But first of all, I worked at Family Planning, where I learned how to talk about sex, and then worked on the methadone program, where I learned all about drugs. Yeah. So had lots in common with young people. and then we started Youth One Stop Shop in 1995 because we felt that we had feedback from young people that it was too embarrassing to go to family planning because everybody knew what you were going for. And anyway, young people are more than just sex, so you need far more than just that. So we started the One Stop Shop with a free service of doctor, nurse, counselor, and youth workers, social workers. And that was in the center of town back then. And that was called 198 because we couldn't think of a better name because it was 198 Hereford Street. So that's became 198. Interestingly enough, after the earthquakes, we had to start again, obviously, because everything fell down. We found a little wooden house on Barbados Street. Well, it was on the corner of Gloucester and Barbados. And actually, it was, I think it was 264 or something like that, Gloucester Street. And we noticed that next door to us on Barbados Street was 296. And then on the other side, it was a school. So we rang the post office and said, could we become 298 Barbados Street?
That's great.
So there you go. There's 298. We've kept the number ever since. But we've moved loads since then. And the other thing I do is a little bit of research and teaching with the Collaborative Trust, and I teach anybody who wants to hear, and medical students and GPs and nurses and, yeah.
Awesome. Wow. That's such a cool story to hear, like, you know, being in Hong Kong to then the UK to here to just your massive background and young people, like that's also something I'd love to aspire to one day.
It's pretty good fun, I have to say.
Awesome. So tonight we kind of asked some young people questions about GP related / youth health. So just quite a broad field. So we'll start off with one of the kind of general questions that came through was kind of maybe for you to tell us what a GP is. So what do they do for young people that don't know what a GP actually is?
Sure. So GPs are doctors who, I guess, they work in primary care. Primary care means you can go and see them without having a referral. So like for going to hospitals or anything like that, you have to have a referral letter. and then you get sent an appointment. But for GPs and 298 and any of the other organisations, you can just turn up. But the trouble is with GPs now is that they're organised. They used to be kind of like standalone. So you went along and there was like usually one doctor or maybe two round the corner, and you went and knocked on the door and said, "Hi, can I come and see you?" type of thing. That was a long time ago. And the trouble is they cost. So originally, like, there was no government subsidy, but then gradually, obviously, as you know, costs went up and all that kind of stuff, the government subsidized going to a GP for old people and young people, basically. But at first it was only like under fives, but gradually that's been added to, and now it's under 14 that it's free. And GPs are now in things called public primary health organizations. And now there's a whole group of GPs in one of those. Most of the GPs in Christchurch are part of Pegasus, which is like the primary health organization. But then there's a few who aren't. So we're members of the Christchurch PHO. And it makes not much difference, to be quite honest. I think we're about the only free place, and we only got to 25. There's Kingdom Clinic, Piki Te Ora. So Kingdom Clinic's on the corner of Cashel Street and Cashel, and I think it's near Stanmore Road. So that's Kingdom Clinic, and then there's Piki Te Ora, which is on Linwood Ave, and then there's there was one out in Brighton, and there's one in Aranui, and they are subsidised. And you, it only costs $18 if you're over 14. But for all of them, it's much cheaper if you've got a community services card. So anybody who's not kind of getting their bills paid by their parents, definitely apply for a community services card. I think you have to be 18 to apply for one. If you're on a youth benefit, like between 16 and 18, then you can apply for a community services card. So that definitely makes it cheaper. So it's really worth applying for one of those.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks. And so, I saw your thing about what can I go and see my GP about, anything, basically. Well, yeah. I know most young people think that you only go for physical stuff like coughs and colds and flus and, you know, tummy aches and stuff like that. But actually, you can go for mental health stuff. Certainly, they don't have much time. That's the trouble is.
Yeah.
15 minutes. So it's quite hard to sort things out. But I teach them all to do a heads assessment. So everybody listening can be a secret shopper. and when they go to a GP, just make sure they do a heads assessment. And what that does, that means, is that they should ask you about who you're living with, should ask you about school or work, you know, what you're doing. They definitely should ask you about your mood. They definitely should ask about any sexual health stuff you might need. Definitely should ask about whether you use alcohol or any other drugs. And they obviously, this is all on top of what you've gone for. So the whole point is that we've been trying to get them to just do everything while somebody's there, rather than go, "Oh, right, here's your cough. We have to come back for anything else," you know? Mm-hmm. But if they're not doing that, let me know and I'll go around and teach them.
So obviously you can go to a doctor for a range of things. If you are going to a doctor for your mental health per se, at what point do you know that it's gone from just you're having a few bad days to you need to go seek help?
Good question. If you find that you're so low that you really can't function very well, whether it's at school or at work or just around the house, you can't get out of bed. But even just before you get to that, if it feels like it's getting to that, and if it's been going for 2 weeks, definitely go and see a GP. If you're having any suicidal thoughts and thinking, "Gosh, I'm going to give up. I can't be bothered. I might as well not be here," definitely go and see a GP.
Awesome. Yeah, good to know. So what do you do if you've been to your GP and you're concerned about something and maybe they just don't feel like you're taking you seriously and you're just struggling and you don't know what to do. Do you have any advice on what people can do if they feel like they aren't being taken seriously?
Well, if you're at school, definitely go and see the school counsellor, without a doubt, because then they can actually speak up on your behalf to the GP and say, look, this is serious. Don't just fob them off.
Yeah.
And if you've got supportive parents, obviously, then that's great if, you know, you can get them to kind of chippy them along. If you haven't got either of those, actually, if you ring Youthline and say to them, they're not taking me seriously, can you help? You know, can you kind of contact somebody for me? That's really helpful too.
So obviously a lot of young people, they'll be heading off to the GP with parents. Obviously that's not the case for everyone, but for those who do go to the GP typically with parents, what advice would you give them if they are wanting to see a GP without the parents, but they're feeling a bit too awkward to outright tell their parents, I don't want you to come in?
Yeah. Well, again, if the GP doesn't send the parent out, let me know, because I teach them all to send the parent out. If they're not doing that, I need to know. I'll make sure they get better, you know, listen to the teaching better. It's hard for as a young person to say this, because as I say, you don't really want to upset your parents.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's worth saying, if you don't want to upset your parents, when you go first time, say, you know, let it all happen, and then go, Mum, would you mind if I've got to know the doctor now? It was really cool that you came with me. Next time, would it be okay if I go on my own? Now I know what to do. So that the parent feels happy that the GP is going to talk to you, but also then you can go on your own. But most GPs should ask the parent to leave, you know, like halfway through.
Awesome. Yeah, it's really good tips. I think it is. It's like it can be quite scary, quite daunting as you're sitting there, but you really want to speak to a GP without, you know, your parents around, but that upsetting of worrying about it is,
So you can either say, can I go next time on my own? Or just towards the end, you can say, Mum, do you mind if I just talk to the GP on my own now? If the GP hasn't said that. And most parents are pretty good with that. But if your parent isn't, well, just ask if you can go on your own next time.
Awesome. Yeah. If you are still kind of, so if you're back, we're kind of going a little bit backwards there, but if talking about your GP and you're meeting with them, maybe by yourself or with your parents, and you're kind of feeling that you're just not gelling with each other, you're not really getting each other, you're really struggling to communicate, at what point do you know to seek out a new GP? Can you go seek out a new GP? Or are you kind of stuck in there if you've been there for a while?
Yeah, this was the question, is you're not going to like the answer. If you're at uni, great, just go and enroll with uni or with Polytech, with their student services. But if you're not, it's really hard because loads of doctors aren't taking any new patients.
Mm.
So it's not that you can't go and ask for a new GP. You can, but the trouble is very few of them are taking new people on. But if you find a GP, you know, if somebody recommends you to a GP, you can give them a ring and say, I'd like to register with your practice. And then you go in, you collect the forms and you fill in the forms. And then hopefully they'll give you an appointment. And then at that appointment, you agree for your records to be transferred from your old GP to your new one.
Gotcha.
And that's really helpful because then the new GP knows kind of like what's been happening to you and what medications you've been on and all stuff you've probably forgotten anyway, and immunizations and stuff like that. So it's really helpful if you can give permission for your new doctor to get your old records.
Cool. Awesome. So when you're looking for a new doctor, maybe it's been that you've moved house, or maybe, I don't know, you've just started up university. What would you do to look for a new GP? So say you didn't have a choice and you needed to find a GP in your area, what would be the best way to do that?
Go online and just go a GP near me. that's the best thing to do. And it's quite good if you can choose a practice where there's lots of GPs in a way. You don't get such personal service, but you've got a choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that if in that practice you choose one and they don't tend to be somebody you can gel with, then at least there's other people in the same practice, so you don't have to go through all the rigmarole of changing, you know, your notes and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. And we kind of talked about it earlier, but just to reiterate, I guess, again, where are the cheapest places to go in Christchurch? You know, I know you talked about the funding with the community service card, but is there any other funding? Like, where's the places? Because cost is a huge barrier for young people. I know, like, I've had multiple conversations with young people who don't want to go to their family GP because they're concerned about their parents knowing about something, so they want their own one, but you know, they're worried about the funding because they don't have the money themselves to go, and so it can be quite a huge barrier to actually accessing a GP.
I know, it's really bad. I tell you what, we'd love to see you at 298, but we're at capacity, you know, we're just full. Oh, wow. We only get enough money to have 20 hours a week doctor and 20 hours a week nurse. Mm-hmm. Do your best. Honestly, if you're feeling really bad and there's nowhere else to go, then go online to the 298 website and fill in the form. And even if we can't help you, we can usually find someone who can help you. But if you're having to do that, write to your MP and say, please give the 298 more money. Or write to the DHB and say, please give 298 more money.
Yeah.
And we know 20% of young people do not have enough money to go and see a GP. It's terrible. I mean, 20% is a lot of people.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
So obviously, you're not only a GP, you also do a lot of work with young people. What do you think are some of the biggest issues that young people are facing right now?
Definitely mental health issues. So anxiety and depression and kind of, I don't know. I hear a lot of young people say to me, what's the point?
Mm.
You know, kind of like losing hope a bit, which is really sad. But, you know, we've had a lot to deal with, so it's not really surprising. I think family violence is a big part of that, especially growing up, you know, when you're under 10, because it really affects you, for a long, long time, especially if you don't get help.
Yeah.
I don't know, but my feeling is that alcohol and other drugs they're not as much of a problem as that. And certainly my advice would be, don't use alcohol and other drugs to help you feel better. It doesn't work.
Yeah, definitely. We've had a couple of questions that came through, so I thought I'd sneakily throw them on you. At the moment, it's kind of like prime time for university students like myself, where it's exam time, so stress levels are very high. Even for high school students, it's just stress levels. Everyone, I think, is feeling a little bit stressed, you know, that post wind down from lockdown, and everyone's just feeling stressed. So I guess the question is what can you do to manage your stress? Top tips for managing stress.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. The major thing is getting enough sleep. And it's so tempting not to, because it's so tempting to stay up, you know, till 3 o'clock in the morning, cramming and everything. But really, you cannot pump function. You need 8 hours, even though it's very tempting to keep going. You'll find actually you're cramming next day. You can do an hour's worth in what would have taken you 3 hours the night before. So really important to get enough sleep. Second thing is obviously brain food, fruit and veggies. Try and keep away from the chips. And if you need something to keep you going, have some carrots and apples in the fridge so you can chew on those to keep you going while you're studying. I think the third thing probably is do get some exercise, because when you exercise, especially when you get your pulse rate going, you make endorphins, and endorphins help to cheer you up. You actually also make cannabinoids. So, you know, you don't need to buy it. You just run around the block fast. And that helps calm you down. So amazing. The brain is so clever. But then I guess it's quite useful if you can try and do the mindfulness thing. So you train your brain to focus as much as you can. So it's like, Most of those apps are around breathing, you know?
Yeah.
And the clever thing about breathing, and I know it doesn't sound clever, but when you breathe out, you go, you actually make GABA. And GABA is a chemical in the brain that calms everything down. It's absolutely fantastic. So you lower your shoulders and you go, and if you do about five of those before you start studying, it's really helpful.
Well, that's good to know.
And if you're a smoker, which of course none of you are, what you do is you get an empty cigarette box and you get some paper straws and you cut them up the length of a cigarette, and you put them in, and you take one out and you go, and it's great. And by the time you've done five, it's gone soggy, but then you know that it's time to study then.
Wow. There we go. So your first tip you mentioned about making sure that we get enough sleep. Have you got any tips for people for good sleep hygiene? So what can we do to make sure that we do get good sleep?
Yeah. So what you do, you get a piece of paper and you write down five things. And they could be anything like, I don't know, have a hot drink, brush your teeth, you know, I don't know, put your jammies on, read a real boring book, and switch on some really calm music. And the idea is you've got to train your brain, because you've got the sleep center in your brain that switches off, switches everything off. And in the olden days, before we had electricity, when the daylight went, the center in your brain switched everything off. You know, that was, you know, that was the signal. Great.
Yeah.
But now we have 24/7 light, so it doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. So what you have to do is train that sleep center by having the same five things every night for at least 2 weeks. And to start that off, it's best if you can try and get up at the same time every day. Because if you don't, then you're not tired enough, because you slept in till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And so, of course, you're not tired at 10 o'clock at night. But if you can, try and get up at the same time, and then usually go to bed at the same time and have those five things that you do. Doesn't matter what they are, really. Not exercise and not scary movies. But if you can do those same five things, it's really helpful.
Awesome. So basically we're going to talk about the Youth Hub now, because obviously you've basically co-founded what your big plans are for the Youth Hub. So we just wanted you to let you have your place to, you know, plug the Youth Hub, everything about it, what's happening, share about it all with us.
Well, my main plug is that we've been co-designing for the last 2 years with the main organisations who are coming in, and we've done heaps of focus groups with different sorts of young people. So we went to Tupunawai, the Youth Justice Centre, the diversity group at St Andrews, Avonside Girls High, Te Oroho, and the Youth Council, obviously. And you guys weren't going all that much 2 years ago, so I would have come to you. But I'm now looking for what, and you'll see in a minute, we've got we've done the outside, and I'll show it to you.
Yeah.
But we need intensive help with the insides, because it's mostly just open plan at the moment. And what I need, I've got four people on the Youth Hub Youth Advisory Group, and I need a few more who've got some time. So this is my plug. If you've got some time and you're keen, and it's really important that we have all different sorts of young people, because the most important part of the hub, it's got to be welcoming to as many different sorts of people as we can. So everybody from, hate to say it, skinheads, but they count too, right the way through to, you know, refugee and migrant young people, and, you know, everybody. So because the most important thing for me for the hub is somewhere where you feel you belong. No matter who you are. So it's creating that atmosphere of belonging and acceptance that is what we're after. So we want the interior to reflect that.
Yeah.
So we need, I need some people who might have about an hour to spare once a week. And there'll probably be Zoom meetings at the beginning, but then we'll go to different organizations that are coming in. But then it'll be, for like the interconnecting spaces, it'll just be young people, and especially for the housing.
Cool. Awesome.
So, should I show you the pictures?
Yeah, go on.
Oh, Hang on a minute. I'll share screen. Okay, so can you see that?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, cool. So that's just all the people on our board. Some of you might know there's a lawyer and an accountant, and Kane's just qualified as a teacher, and Winamu's Naitahu and Phyllis Samoan. And so we've got a few different people. And these are all the agencies who are coming in.
Wow.
Obviously the Youth One Stop Shop, and Qtopia will be there full time. The Collaborative Trust doing research and training, the whole organ, all those three will come in as a whole organization.
Yeah.
So will Catapult probably, who help with employment. Community Law will come in and give advice like once or twice a week. Youthline will be there, the whole organization will move in.
Wow.
And so will Voice. They support young people in state care. And Cultivate will be there with growing organic veggies. And then visiting agencies will be some government agencies. Nurse Maud, school nurses, hopefully will have an office there. Presbyterian Support will advise with income support stuff. Methodist Mission will run the housing. And then Supporting Families and Mental Illness will come in as needed. And City Mission hopefully will provide their youth alcohol and other drug counsellors. And we hope that they will also help run a drop-in centre for parents of teenagers, so that they can get some support, separately.
Yeah.
And it's going to be at 109 Salisbury Street. So here's Durham Street. Here's the casino. Yeah. And that's Colombo. And that's Gracefield Ave. Sorry, that's Gracefield Ave. That's Colombo. That's the Salvation Army Citadel.
Yeah.
And it's just the old bowling club.
Uh-huh.
109 Salisbury Street. So that's what it looks like now. That's the big car park. And that's the bowling club rooms. And that's the greens. A bit dilapidated since the earthquakes. It's been not used since the earthquakes, and Anglican Care bought it for us.
Oh, wow.
Awesome.
So we can't sign the lease until we've got resource consent, but it's in for consent now, and it's publicly notified. So if you want to make a submission, say, yes, we need this, I can send you the link.
Sounds good. We'll put that up there.
Yeah. So you can see that it's kind of pretty central. It's about 15 minutes walk from the bus exchange, and near the, you know, Turanga and Margaret Mahe playgrounds over here, and, you know, the arts centre and stuff and sports facility. So if we ever get that, one day. And this is what it will look like from Salisbury Street. So that's like the greeting fellow. This is greenhouses on the roof.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
And this is a cafe. We'll probably make it vegetarian because these grow veggies. that obviously be run by young people, and kind of first job opportunity and training opportunity and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then this is what we've got: apartments going down this side, so 3 to 4 bedroom apartments. One of them will have 4 bedrooms, and they'll have downstairs. Bedrooms, but the others will, for obviously people with wheelchairs and stuff. We need youth advice, your advice really, in terms of do we have, like in one of them, have maybe a parent with children or a couple of solo parents with their children? We're not quite sure yet. At the moment, they're single people, obviously, like a flatting situation. And then this will be a caretaker's kind of cottage thing. And then that's what it looks like from the sky. So this is Salisbury Street going down here. That's Gracefield Ave going around there. There's 2 lots of housing. So there's like hostel type housing here, with 10 rooms on each floor and a youth worker living in, and shared kitchen and laundry and lounge. But each room will have en suite. And then here's a basketball court. And then this is kind of like a courtyard for the hostel. And then in a minute I'll show you. Underneath this is 298. Yeah. And then the services area, so interview rooms and shared office space. And then here is an event center holding about 200 people, which you can use for indoor sport or gigs or dance or whatever. And then here, creative arts center with maybe recording studios, although Turanga said we could use theirs, but definitely band practice rooms and stuff like that. And these are greenhouses on the roof. And then there's the greeting fairy and the cafe. This is an art gallery to show kind of like what you've created. And then a wee quiet courtyard, sort of spiritual area there.
Awesome.
So, that's what it looks like a bit more closer up.
It's massive, really, when you think about it. Yeah. Like they're all separate, like, you know, the house is together, but they're all a house itself.
Yeah. So this is, you can see here, this is the hostel one. Yeah. And then here's the townhouses and, basketball court and courtyard and,
It's so cool.
So that's what we really need your help with. So it's only going to cost $20 million. What I'm hoping for is that we've applied to be one of those shovel-ready projects.
Yeah.
And I've said we'll be shovel-ready if you give us $10 million. Because that'll pay for the housing and the kind of like the services at the back here. And then I thought, well, then we can fundraise for the arts centre and the cafe and the reading fare and the greenhouses.
Yeah. So it's so cool. Really cool to see it as well, because you hear a lot about it, but you don't always get to see the photos and things. It's really nice to be able to see the photos of the project itself, and actually I think it kind of engages people more too. They actually get to see what your plans are. So that they're willing.
But as I say, we've worked for 2 years. At the beginning, we just had this housing down this side, and then here, all of this was cultivate. Then we had a meeting with the neighbours, and they felt there should be more residents. It's a residential zoned area, so the neighbours don't want us. Surprise, surprise. So we thought, well, we'll make it more residential. So we added some more housing and we put cultivate on the top. So that's worked out quite well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And really we need more housing anyway, because, there's not enough youth housing. So people can stay here they'll have to pay rents, but it'll be income related rents. And the idea is to stay between 3 and 18 months. While you're looking for a job, the only criteria will really be that you're looking for a job or in training.
Awesome.
That's cool.
That's a huge, massive issue, housing, massive issue just for young people in general, for safe places, and they might have a home, but it might not be a safe environment. And so, having this is just a massive need. Huge need. I mean, everywhere probably in New Zealand needs it, but
I reckon there should be at least one in Hamilton, Dunedin, three in Auckland,
Awesome. So you plugged your youth hub. How do people go about if they want to donate to you guys or they want to do fundraising for 298? How do they go about it? Have you got any
basically the websites, I should have written them down. Hang on, I'll write them on a whiteboard. Hold on. The youth hub one is youth hub Chisha. .org. And then the 298 one is just 298 basically. And they both have donate now buttons, but a surprise. And if anybody's interested in being on the Youth Hub Youth Advisory Group, there's an info on the website. There's an info at the email's just info at youthhubchitcha.
Awesome.
And then I'll get in touch with you But on that email, if you could just let me know your cell phone number as well, because often I know some people don't look at their emails that much. So I usually text and say, look at your email, please.
So in terms for the youth advisory group that you're setting up for the Youth Hub, is there a particular age group, obviously youth, but is there a particular age range that you've got for the group, or is it just whoever?
Any age. I think most people at the moment are kind of like between 16 and 25, but any age is fine.
Awesome. Cool. Have you got a specific number that you're wanting to get, or is it just whoever you can
get? Whoever's keen, basically.
Awesome. That's cool. That's cool.
At the moment, we thought we'd try and have meetings like around sort of 3:30, 4-ish, just in case people have things in the day, you know, like school and stuff.
Cool. So kind of just like a final wrap up question. What is the one thing you want young people to take away from this conversation tonight?
Be in charge of your own life.
Yeah.
You know, if you're finding it hard to make decisions, talk to somebody wise, but, you know, it's your life. I think if you can do those keeping healthy tips, that would be fantastic. But please, please, please never hesitate to reach out for help.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sue, for joining us tonight. I've learned so much. I've loved seeing about the Youth Hub. I was so excited to hear about it. Really appreciate you joining us tonight. Thank you so much. Kia ora, my name is Chelsea and I'm the co-chair for CDHB Youth Advisory Council.
And I'm Abby and I'm a council member.
And we're here today to talk to you about some tips and tricks for working with young people here in health settings. So thank you so much for joining us. So who is the CDHB Youth Advisory Council? We're formerly known as the YAC, because it's a little bit easier to say, but we are a group of young people aged between 16 and 24 years old. There's 15 of us on the council currently, and some are either in high school or they're at uni, ARA, doing other tertiary courses, working, doing an array of other things, essentially. And we all have a common purpose in that we want to advocate for young people here in our health system. We either have our own experience in the health system, or we have a family member or a friend that we advocate for instead. And we are the only Youth Advisory Council in the country. So this is something that we're really proud and passionate about with the YAC.
So the YAC's purpose is to give a voice to the 12 to 24-year-old youth people in Canterbury. We've observed that there seems to be a lot of youth voice lost within the system, so we want to create a safe and inclusive environment for all young people to get the healthcare that they need and deserve. So we do this through a range of different projects. We do advocacy, create resources, work with health professionals and things like professional development, making services better for the people like us who going through the healthcare system and deserve the best care that they can get. So how can we improve young people's experience in our health system? This is a question we get asked a lot because it's basically our big focus and our big goal. And so some of the ideas that we're going to share, the little tips and tricks, may seem super simple, but we recently ran a survey with the Youth of Christchurch asking what they found really, really effective and what really didn't work so well for them within their health experience. And so we used this for a project that we're working on to present to local nurses here in Canterbury, and we've also used it to inform the rest of our presentation today. So let's get into it.
So as we know, we're talking to nurses, so we know that you know that adolescence is a really crucial development period. We think it's really important to frame our conversation for the rest of our presentation around this point, because as you know, 12 to 24 year olds, it's quite a huge age gap. There's so much going on for a young person at this time. You know, they're dealing with relationships, friendships, school, uni. There is so much going on for a young person that we need to really be mindful of this when we're in the health system, because they've got so much going on in their world that health may or may not be their biggest priority. And so, yeah,
crucial development period for physical, cognitive and socio-emotional. So this is actually probably the most crucial development period as humans. We know the brain is not fully developed until they're 25 for females and 27 for males. So I think this is incredibly something to be mindful of when we're in the health system, is that you're dealing with people that brains are not fully developed yet. And so this is actually something we should think about when we're speaking to young people, how we talk, how we work with them, because we know executive function is still being developed, which is really crucial for things like making decisions, being independent, things like that, which they're on the verge of being, but not quite there yet. And then, of course, egocentrism is also a key part. You know, we're trying to find out, where's our identity in the world? Who are we? What's going on? All of this is going on. So it's a time of exploration for these young people, which we should be super mindful of, and how we give our care to young people, because we want to make sure that we're not judging our young people, but rather educating them on their, if you've got any concerns or something about their behaviour.
So communication is truly one of the most important things, and it can make or break a young person's health experience. So something that's really major, just be really cautious of talking down to a young person. It may feel easy to baby them, but being condescending is not helpful in any way, and often people don't mean to, but just being aware of this and making sure you're speaking directly to the young person. They're ultimately the person that you're there to help, and so while there may be caregivers or whānau, parents, anyone in the room, try not to ignore the young person, even if it may seem easier to talk to the old person or the adult in the room. It empowers a young person to be the driver in their own health. The use of lay terminology is absolutely crucial. It's really easy to throw up big terms, especially when you're so used to spending all day talking about things with other medical professionals, but a young person will just disengage if they don't understand. So explain what blood tests you're doing, why you're doing it. Taking a little bit of time out of the appointment to make sure that someone really understands is just so beneficial. Reframing questions to things like, how can we help you and what do you need from us, just puts the ball back in the young person's court and makes them feel like they're valued and what they're there for actually matters. Another wee tip we think works really well is just having a little notepad or a piece of paper to just hand over to someone if they feel like they can't verbalise something or embarrassed, particularly around topics that have a bit of a stigma around them, unfortunately, like mental health, sexual health, just these things. Sometimes they're harder to talk about, so if you can ask someone to write it down, it can be really useful, and then you can talk about that in that appointment, or if you have availability to have another appointment and bring it up later on if you need to get some info or find out more, that's absolutely fine. But overall, communication is key, and it's something we really focus on a lot in our professional development sessions.
So appointments are another way that we can look after our young people in the health system. So one of the key things that we suggest is giving a young person some time to open up. Now, we know as nurses, you probably don't get to dictate how long you get to see a young person for, or how many times you get to see a young person for. But if you can, we really suggest giving extended appointments or booking a follow-up, because a young person is probably not going to be able to tell you straight away why they've attended an appointment today. This can be, you know, confronting and scary to turn up and suddenly share everything that's going on. So we can ask you to consider extending your appointments if you can for a young person. If you can't, book a follow-up, whether that's a 5-minute phone to check in on how they found that appointment or an in-person one again. But doing something like this so a young person has some space and time and don't feel rushed is really crucial. Working together is another huge important point. It might seem incredibly obvious, but this allows you to empower a young person to make informed decisions about their own health. This is really important. We want young people to feel empowered in their health. So asking questions like, what do they want from this appointment? What is the reason they haven't turned up to your room today, and getting to find out what's that common goal, because you'll have some decisions or ideas that you want to suggest. What do they actually want to? And then you can work together on this common goal, which is super important. Confidentiality, we know this is really important. We know that this is very crucial in a young person experience in the health system. So we ask you to always bring it up with a young person. Remind them that this is confidential. But if you need to break it for any reason, just explain why. Explain why you have to breach it. Provide rationale. That's all a young person needs, is to know why you have to break it. It's not up on here on the screen, but if you are late to an appointment, again, we know sometimes you don't have any control in that. So if you're late, simply just walking into a room and apologising for why you're late values a young person and their time. It might seem super obvious to do this, but it's actually something that can make or break an appointment too, and feeling that you value a young person. And finally, we always suggest that you should make sure you get some time alone with a young person in the room. So if they've come with a caregiver or a whānau member or friends or whoever they've come with, try and make sure you can get some alone time with this young person. So this can be seen by taking them out of the room to get their height or their weight measures or even doing their blood pressure. You might already be able to do this in the room that you're in, but taking them out of the room means that you can ask some questions without these other people being around, and you might actually get some more honest responses too. And this actually breaks some of the barriers that we've seen where if young people are in the room and parents have been told to leave, they might get confronted at home about these questions. So we just encourage you to really do this as well.
Building rapport is super, super key to having a good appointment and making sure a young person feels listened to and respected. So it can be super distressing. It can be really vulnerable to share whatever's going on in a young person's life, and this is why building rapport is so, so important. So firstly, something that we really encourage that is really often overlooked and is quite simple is just getting to know a young person for who they are, who they present as, who they are in the moment, and not basing them on preconceived ideas about who they are based on their medical records and their medical notes. And this can be done by actually just sitting and listening to them, not reading through notes or thinking about things, just actively listening. And if you're not sure what this is, you can have a look on the internet. There's heaps of research about it. Have a little look and you'll see pretty quickly. Not hard to do. Just actively listening to the young person in the room. And being aware of the power imbalance that already exists within the relationship is so important. And we know these professional boundaries, confidentiality, and we don't want to break any of those boundaries by saying, this is my phone number, this is where I live. But opening up the appointment with some dialogue about something that isn't health related can really, really just change things, make someone feel more at ease, less anxious about what's about to happen. So just saying, I watched this movie last night, have you been watching anything on Netflix? Or I went out for dinner, what's your favorite restaurant around here? Just little things like that where you can connect on a level that isn't about medicine and health can be so beneficial. We cannot express this enough. Asking a young person how to pronounce their name correctly, if you're the slightest bit unsure, it makes them feel valued, like they're a real person and not just an appointment slot or their medical history. And asking what name they prefer to go by, sometimes this isn't their birth name or isn't what you expect to be, but it can make them, again, feel really valued. And same as this is asking someone what their pronouns are, and introducing yourself with your own pronouns can also make such a difference. And it's something we should all be doing all the time anyway to create a safe space. So just saying, hey, I'm Abby, you can call me she, her, just sets it up and makes someone feel comfortable to tell you their own pronouns. Noting these down, both name pronunciation and pronouns, means that you actually care and you want to remember, and it's not just something you're doing to please them in the moment. And we know nurses are the kindest and friendliest people, and we constantly hear and experience the kindness that you all show, but it's so important and we really appreciate it.
So creating a safe and youth-friendly environment, of course, is key when working with young people in the health setting. So as we talked about just before, Abby's already briefly talked about it, introducing yourself as you walk into the room is really important. Again, seems like a real obvious thing, but can be hit and miss, especially if health professionals are running into one room into another. Sometimes they'll simply forget this act of introducing themselves. what's their name? And sharing your pronouns is really crucial too, because then a young person feels safe. They know that you respect them. And this also can actually allow for you to create a really informal setting rather than it being really health and clinical. It can just be super informal, having a chat about what's going on. Other things you can consider is lighting. This is something, again, that's really simple, but can make a huge difference for those that have sensory issues, that struggle with overstimulation. Just considering the lighting is really crucial. When we think of toys in health settings, we generally think of having toys in like waiting rooms and things to keep kids distracted. However, actually having sensory toys available in your clinic, so whether that's in your waiting rooms or your clinical rooms, actually can be really useful for young people. So if you don't know what sensory toys are, they're pretty common these days. There's things like fidget toys, there's the little pop-it squares, things that are going on. There's an array of basically of sensory toys that exist out there. You can get and you can put them into your clinic and waiting rooms, and basically that means young people can distract themselves, it can ease anxiety, it can help with overstimulation. So something so simple yet can make a huge difference for a young person experiencing the health system. And again, we hope that our entire health system is like this already, but making sure that the space is accessible is another is super a crucial point. And we also encourage having posters on the wall. So these posters should support young people. They should support our communities, like our LGBTQ plus communities, our migrant communities, our different culture. We should have them in different languages, just creating a space where everyone feels included and safe and welcomed into the environment is really important and can make a huge difference.
We always support a hauora approach to health and well-being, and te whare tapa whā should always be considered in how to approach an appointment and a young person as they present to you. Something else we get you to think about is being sensitive and mindful of the past experiences that some young people will bring to an appointment, especially if they have experienced any type of trauma, including medical trauma, sexual abuse, any kind of family or domestic violence, is really important, as this can cause some different reactions. And you may just need to operate slightly differently and be more sensitive around things to make sure that they're feeling really, really comfortable. This can even be seen in things such as asking to take a blood test, asking them, what arm do you prefer? Do you have a particular vein that you usually get blood taken from? This can be really appreciated, especially for someone who's getting these tests regularly, just acknowledging that and asking for their preference. And something else to consider is also just asking for consent to touch someone. It's something you probably do every day, all day, but just saying, oh, I'm just going to grab your arm now to put the blood pressure monitor on it. Is that all right? Do you mind? Can be so appreciated, especially for people who can get overwhelmed by sensory things or by physical touch and contact. So consent is something we really encourage. Something else we really encourage everyone to do is just acknowledge your own biases. We all have them. and work on treating the young person as the expert in their own life. It's their life in the end, and yeah, it's really important. Making sure a young person leaves their appointment knowing when their next appointment is, what the plan is going forward, who they can contact, if they've got new medication, what's it for, how to take it, where are they going to get it, will it be faxed to their pharmacy, are there going to be any side effects, when do they take it, and what to do if they have any concerns at all. Just making sure that they feel like they can leave feeling like they are in charge of their own health is so empowering for a young person. And young people will always, always remember health professionals that were empathetic and went out of their way to help them, especially if it's a time where they're at their lowest. You're not going to be forgotten, not at all.
Some other little pointers, again, we brushed on this at the very beginning, but coming from a place of non-judgment is so crucial. We know that young people will probably be partaking in some risky behaviour, so rather than judging and condemning them, just come from a place of care, come from a place of concern and ask them what's going on, rather than judging them is probably one of our big points. beware to not dismiss concerns. Again, this is probably a really big one that we have come across when working with young people, dismissing concerns, especially symptoms like pain. Unfortunately, we do hear phrases like, it's all in your head, or have you tried yoga? And although yoga definitely has its place, it's not always helpful in this setting to talk about it in this way. So we just ask and encourage that you just listen to a young person, listen to their concerns, see what they think is going on for them. And another huge one is avoiding blame on health conditions solely on weight. So this one may seem controversial because, of course, we know weight is actually involved in some health conditions. However, we also know that adolescence is a time where body image, self-image is a huge struggle, and we actually know that a lot of eating disorders actually present at this time and period of someone's life. So instead of asking to get them weighed every session, see if you can avoid doing that if possible. Asking them if they want to be weighed is really important too, because some of them might just not want to, and that's actually okay. We know you have to operate in some way, which sometimes you actually have to do that, but if you can try avoid it or not make everything about their weight, that's actually really important so that we don't degrade a young person. Things like, again, following through with promised scans, appointments, things you would that you said you were going to do. Again, this might seem obvious. You're probably all already doing it in your practice, but it actually can make or break an experience for someone, because, you know, if you're not following through with scans and appointments and things, they might just actually not want to come back, and we don't want to have that going on. So we really encourage that one. And as Abby's said already, you can make a huge difference in a young person's life. So you are very valued, but these are little things that you can consider to make it even better.
We just want to leave you with a quote from a TED Talk that's our favourite and we recommend watching. It's just, every young person needs someone who makes them feel like a somebody when they feel like a nobody.
Yak Yarns, for fun conversations with health professionals about youth health. Get the podcast at plainsfm.org.nz, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can get in touch with the CDHB Youth Advisory Council on the CDHB website, Facebook, Instagram, or you can email them at cdhbyouth@gmail.com.